Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I absolutely waxed lyrical because I just thought it was, so fast, so capable.
And I thought actually it's quite a cool thing. But within half an hour of driving it, you're like, oh, bollocks, I wish I was in a 911.
He also said to me, I skidded that car with you, don't you remember it? I went, no, I don't. Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 51. T.S. Eliot said that April is the cruelest month. He's completely wrong. January into February is because most of you who are self-employed have had a tax return and a VAT return, and we're here to make your life better. The Addicts will cheer you up. Manish isn't here at the moment because he's just dropping his kid off at school. And as all Addicts have always said, dogs and children come before podcasts in that order.
Yes.
So we're going to start off with the thorny issue of electric vehicles and Porsche's strategy. I'm going to throw this to the floor with one statement. I've been a bit impish overnight on the old Instagram because I've got jet lag. I view Porsche as the company that always gets it right. Its strategies are the ones that every other car company, I think, envies. I'm not sure it's got EVs right because it's announced a new Taycan, one I think there are lots of unsold old Taycans. The Macan's gone full electric at a time when I think people quite like Macans with internal combustion engines. So has Porsche got it wrong, or is Porsche so far ahead of the curve we're going to be proved wrong? Chris Cooper.
No, or yes, or maybe.
Oh, great.
So no, because it has to. I mean, there's some boring legislation about the number of vehicles manufacturers have to sell each year that EV. So even though last year, the 2030 date in all of our minds went to 2035, and we thought, oh, that's fine. I don't need to worry. If you look at the fine print, well, not so fine print, in 2030, manufacturers still have to sell 80% EVs in the UK.
Full EVs.
Full EVs, yeah. So not much has changed. So in that respect, they got to get cracking now because it's not that far away. So they've got to do something. But yes, they have gone too soon because nobody wants them.
So as a man, but there are two men here on this podcast that have owned Taycans.
Yes.
Did the experience push back your ability to fully engage with EVs?
100%.
But not for me.
Oh, okay. So what's the difference for you then, Chris?
I actually really liked it. There were things it did that other cars didn't. If you understood its use case, sorry to use that jargony term, then it would fit in. And there were some parts of it. So there's a new Taycan being announced this week, isn't there?
Yeah, they've made it.
It went out. The photos came out overnight.
All right, okay. So I talked to them yesterday, so I thought it was probably going to be today. It's got loads more range.
Yeah.
How much more?
So real world, my Taycan Turbo S did about 220 miles. This one should do just over 300 real world.
Oh, manager's arrived 21 minutes early. So punctual. Manager, we're just discussing whether Porsche has gone too early on the full EV commitment because the new Taycan was released yesterday, well, overnight.
And you understand that many have not been sold. Is that the...
Yes.
I got driven home yesterday by a friend. It wasn't a long drive. Car, you know, maybe 2 miles in central London, so 15 minutes in the car in his new Taycan. Not obviously the new Taycan, but the old new Taycan. He loves it. And I have to say, I really enjoyed the experience. It just whispered through the streets of central London. He loves that car. It's his first ever electric car. He wasn't tempted, you know, in the past by any of the others. They were umming and eyeing about a Mini, I think, as a family. But in the end, he just loves this. He loves size-wise. I couldn't believe how big it is inside. You can get cricket bags in. You can get boys in. It's a great car.
Okay. This is...
Chris, you were talking about the range. How confident do you think we can be on new world range?
So Porsche's... The rule of thumb I have, having looked at this stuff a lot, is that any manufacturer's WLTP claims, you basically got to take about 60% of it. For so real world.
Porsche's claiming from the press.
Porsche was more than that.
35% increase in range.
Yeah.
So the best model gives you 421 miles.
Yeah,
so
I reckon you'll get 75%. Porsche 75% or a little bit more, I think. Based on a little bit of it. Yeah.
And for me, the most the quotation that is the most meaningless. All Taycan variants can charge from 10% to 80% state of charge in 18 minutes. If you've got one of those three-phase things that's got enough to that's come straight off of the national grid, maybe. But I just don't think anyone has the ability to do that, really.
Well, you need one of the Ionity or GridServe 350-kilowatt chargers to do that. Sorry, I'm going to sound very nasal at this point. But they do... I mean, it's not for everyone. And the reason I said... Yes, no, maybe, have they gone too soon? Is, I mean, I think there is a debate to say, is bulk mass EV ever going to be the answer?
And,
you know, will, you know, with my Motorsport UK hat on, talk about this a bit later on, we are very committed to an eclectic future rather than just an electric future. See what I did there? And sustainable fuels is a big part of that. Big part of that.
Yeah,
and I think Akio Toyoda, Mr. Toyoda himself said, I don't think EVs will ever be more than 30% of the future car park. And so if you believe that, then yes, Porsche has gone too soon the way
we haven't
gone.
We haven't got to the full era of limited edition, fully electric cars yet, which will be interesting to see the consumer's relationship with those cars. You know, take a GT3 RS. We always know they're sold out. You can't get one, waiting list, premiums, and they're always exist at premiums. And when we get into the sort of affordable sports car that's electric, that's perhaps limited, it'll be interesting to see how they're received.
Was Toyota's 30%? Sorry, Chris, I was just going to... The Toyota 30%, does he mean... of anything out on the road, so including things like trucks, or does he actually mean cars?
I think he means cars.
Right.
He means cars, yeah.
Wow.
We have lots of limited edition electric sports cars. They're limited because no one's buying them, I'm afraid to say. I come across as a terrible, grumpy anti-EV person. I'm not. I think, you know, Manish's example of, you know, the urbanite that cruises around in their beautiful Porsche because they can charge freely and they don't do many miles is great, but... In the future that I think most car makers envisage, that person shouldn't own a car. They should be using public transport or zipping around on some special object that might not have been invented yet. The motor car tends to be people that cover great distances or should be in the future, and the EV isn't very good at that. And I have to clarify the fact that when I first tested the Taycan Turbo for a TV show, I absolutely waxed lyrical because I thought it was so fast, so capable.
Yeah.
But it's great at all the shit that you don't really need. You know, it's a very strange vehicle because it's incredibly it's much faster than you need. It'll go sideways, which is great for me, but I'm not sure it's that useful for most of the population to buy one. But in the core criteria of being a car, it falls short somehow.
Yeah, I probably am the most positive here of it because had an interesting time with it. But if you'd asked me the question, you can have one car, you can have, and this is first world problems, you can have a Panamera with a turbo petrol engine in it, or you can have a Taycan. Well, I'd have the Panamera.
Yeah. I think it's all about charging, isn't it? It's fair to say the Taycan was quite decent to drive. I didn't mind driving. I mean, it does feel slightly unenjoyable. If you're into cars, and we're probably very much a minority, aren't we, that we actually really, really, really enjoy driving. You know, I wish I lived further away from my office, just as though I had a longer drive to get here. So that's quite niche, isn't it? But the charging thing was just a bit of a nightmare, really. And I've got a Ponzi house with a cable that I can just go home and plug it in. But if you want to actually go anywhere longer than 150 miles and come back, you don't want to wait around for an hour or two, do you, in some petrol station?
And the uncertainty of, will the charger be working? Will it have full power? Will it be dribbling along because everybody's watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Now, there's something else about the Taycan and Porsche's current generation of vehicles in the cabin. And Edward and I experienced the new Cayenne in Australia. They lent us one. I have to say, dead impressive, because they put a V8 back in it. They've gone backwards. Yeah. I think it's a bit of a sign. Porsche had gone for all these V6s, and the engineers have gone, nope, we want a V8 in this bad boy.
Yeah, they were horrible.
You start it up, it gives this massive V8 raft, burble. There's no hybridity inside. But there's one thing missing. And it reminds me of a phrase that the great Henry Brofeldt said. He was describing Headingley as a test ground, because it doesn't have a pavilion in the conventional sense. He said it's like a living room without a fireplace. And the Taycan and all these modern Porsches don't have a cowl that comes out over the instrument binnacle. They just have this flat, and it looks like there's something missing.
Yeah.
And I get in it and say, there's no Simon in there. There needs to be a Simon cowl. There needs to be a cowl. And the Italians defined cowling as an art form, didn't they? Some of the sexiest shapes in Italian cars were those anti-glare, that, you know, they were modelled on, let's say, aspects of a lady's body quite clearly. And there isn't one. These Porsches don't have one. They just have this sort of flat screen and nothing over to stop them, to stop the glare. And I find
there's no call for that. There's no call for that. And nobody's ever said out loud, it's got no Simon before. That's the thing now.
Well, I think we spent too much time in that car, but I don't know whether you did you notice that, Neil, in your Taycan, that you didn't have a sort of cowl over the instruments?
I didn't, actually. It's not really.
It's kind of thing that you would normally pick up on. It's kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
Normally, you get quite sweary about it and blame it on Jerry McGovern.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was really chuffed to have it, because I had one of the early ones, and I did the basic one, whatever that one was called, just a Taycan, I presume, and silver with chocolate leather. And I did the basic sort of spacey wheels, kept it all bigger battery, but other than that, relatively clean. And I thought, actually, it's quite a cool thing. But within half an hour of driving it, you're like, oh, bollocks, I wish I was in a 911.
To summarize this without getting in trouble, I'd like to be proved wrong, but I think with a Macan coming that's electric, and this Taycan as well, I don't envy Porsche sales.
But
sorry, Manish. Chris is obviously having not a rant, but I guess a moment of worry for Porsche, because the Macan is going to be the real tester for them, because this is a real world car where people aren't sort of dipping their toe in the water to see if they fancy a £150,000 Taycan in their life that could be replaced by any load of cars. But, you know, the Macan is this family SUV to put your two children in, some dogs, and do the school run every day. And, you know, you're going to ask the wife to put it in charge every night or go and do that. You know, does it really work for functional day-to-day life? And
no,
clearly some people are going to have to try and. Yeah, well, some people are going to have to make it work for them. Others are just going to reject it, and they're not happy for it. And you know, what one thing with the Taycan, you know, hopefully a lot of people have financed them and write them off against their tax bill, etc. But I'm guessing Macans are going to be bought by cash consumers, not being written off against their company car tax, etc., etc. And if they suffer with anything like the depreciation of a Taycan, people are not going to go anywhere near them.
It's in decline, isn't it? Private purchases of electric vehicles in December went backwards by 15%.
I'm surprised there were any.
The only people that are buying them are companies off the back of the tax deal.
Yeah.
If you're a private person, you're not buying electric, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. My crystal ball tends to splutter the whole time, but I think people will just stick with the car they've got.
Yeah.
I think they'll roll the finance deal and say it's not worth the risk.
It's an expensive private purchase without the company car tax advantages that EVs have. The SMMT, the trade body for motor dealers and traders in the UK, is lobbying that VAT on EVs should be halved.
There's something about this move towards EVs that has changed over the last year or two, in that before there was a little bit of unknown, bit of a exotic unknown around electric vehicles, whereas now I think everyone knows someone that's owned one.
Yes.
And the story that comes from that isn't positive. Most people have got a mate who ran out of juice, or it got recalled, or it lost them 50 grand. I don't hear many stories of people going, oh, it's changed my life, it's brilliant. I don't hear that too often.
I recently I interviewed someone who moved to Shanghai for BMW about 10 or 12 years ago. And the Chinese are really pushing back on European cars at the moment because they don't understand the consumer. And, you know, obviously we've seen BYD now become the biggest electric EV maker in the world. And the way that the car interface works in China is wildly different to that of a Western-built EV, and they're really looking for something different over here, which is why Tesla has performed extraordinarily well, because they took a totally different approach to just, you know, building. Chris sent a video to me this morning of a BMW advert in the US, which is a brilliant advert. But that's all they've really got to offer, you know, their sort of original marketing ploy. They don't really have the product the consumer wants en masse.
That advert, by the way, is the Christopher Walken BMW i5 advert. It is. You know, I know the car, people don't like it. I'd buy the car based on that advert.
Yeah. Talking of Shanghai, Edward, will Shanghai be the next stop on your extended Asian holiday?
No, London. London. I arrived back in London on Sunday. If you'd like to
come
from the airport in an EV or a combustion engine, I'm pretty open-minded.
Right. I'm just trying to find a file on here so I can read something that's happened to me this week. Because we are now going to discuss what we did with cars this week. And two of us have been all over the shop internationally. And I'm sure everyone else has got good stories as well. Let's start with Neil Clifford, because I quite like him. To give us some choice swearing at this time in the morning, please.
Yes. Well, I've done two big things. I went to Retromobile.
Oh.
Ooh. So I was in New York, and then I came back one day in London, and then I went to work in New York, and then went to Paris, not work, with my mate Paul. And we do it every year, and we fly, and we get the first flight out, and we land at Charles de Gaulle at 8 a.m. at Retromobile, opposite, having a little sort of egg and baguette and all of that at 9:30. And Retromobile is brilliant. It's the best classic car show probably in Europe, not as if I've been to any other ones. Well, no, I went to the Padova one actually, but I've never been to the German ones. But anyway, Retromobile is brilliant. And it's sort of been taken over by all the big players of the UK, which is wonderful. The Joe Macaris, the Fiskins, the Kidstons. These huge, bloody, frankly, quite expensive stands, but impressive, brilliantly curated, incredible cars, good coffee. Thank you for everyone for letting me on your stand and giving me coffee. And it's just a great day out. I'd highly recommend it. You see cars that you know, is very difficult to see elsewhere. And lots of lovely French people. And then you go for lunch, and then you walk back down the Tuileries Gardens, and you get your cab back at and you're home for 10 o'clock at night. It's lovely. Lovely day.
Did you drive there or flew?
No, I flew, actually.
That's quite unlike you, Neil. Normally you like the adventure.
Well, you know what? And I do drive to Paris quite a bit, but it's quite tough trying to do Paris in a day there and back and actually have fun in Paris. Because it's 5 hours from my house, and then, you know, and I was worried about all the farmers with their tractors. Didn't see one actually.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know, it's a super pretty
imagine place. Imagine Retromobile was the village fete, and you're in the dog show. What's the dog you would most like to take home?
It's got to be a white 250 GTO in the Kidson stand, isn't it?
That was your pick. I thought it'd be the 917.
Yeah, the Count Rossi 917. You went all the way to see it.
Yeah. Are you really going to be able to drive that every day? I suppose 250 GTO is relatively niche too. I mean, the Count Rossi 917 on Joe Macari's stand, it was definitely a dream for me to see. And my good friend Dario, bless him, organised for me to sit in it, which was really good. So, yeah, that's a tough call. That's a good two-car garage, isn't it, if ever there was one?
Yeah.
You know, when he had his all-white Brabham from 1973 and did very well, Count Rossi contacted him, and he met Count Rossi in Monaco, and Rossi said, "I propose to advertise on your Brabham." And he sent a bunch of designers over. It was going to happen to Bertie. So he's got his white BT44, and these amazing Martini boys mocked up the car, and Bernie apparently came and had a look. I've seen pictures of the car as it was mocked up. And he went, "Nah, don't like it." Literally redesigned the car himself. And the car you see with the, you know, the beautiful Martini Brabham is the Bernie Eccleston Martini, not the Count Rossi Brabham.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, you know, that's the best thing I did, Retromobile, really.
Amazing.
Right.
Do you think having three 250 GTOs on the market at one time is a sign of anything or not?
Yes.
As he said that, peeling a grape. Actually, you didn't peel it, did you? You just woofed it because you're so...
I don't
you know something, Edward. You've eaten that grape because you know something.
I genuinely don't. And what one thing, obviously, these car shows are amazing, and what they try to do, because Essen is very expensive. It's you know, the dealers are spending 200,000 euros to have a stand there, put up their staff. You know, it's super expensive, and clearly they want to bring cars that are fresh to the market that are really exciting. And RM Sotheby's are about to do a private sale on a 250 GTO that's in the US, that's in Florida at the moment. Girardo had the 64-bodied GTO there, and then Simon the 63. You know, this is the rarest of the rare cars.
Hartley's got one.
Yeah, well, no, the Hartley one is the one that's going to RM, I think, is the ex-Laid Law car.
Yeah.
So if you were about to sell a 250 GTO as a motor trader, you know, unless you're Simon Kidston, it's the highlight of your working life, isn't it? You've got the unicorn. How do you feel if two others suddenly come to market at the same time? Do you remove yours? Do you advise your client that this might be a more difficult process than you thought? How do you go about that?
Well, also, you'd normally hope it would be quite easy, because if there's only one for sale, there's not the choice of the other ones, and now there's a choice of three. And yes, they'll all be priced differently and have different histories and rebodied accidents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it just adds a level of complexity to making a decision.
Will they all sell?
I would have thought so. At some point or another, I would say the one at RM will 100% sell. And I would say, given the fact that the owner's sold almost his entirety of his collection that he's acquired in a very short space of time, he might have to. The other two I couldn't comment on, but I think if a car's publicly in the market today, it's there to be sold.
Yeah.
So
I'm good.
Anyway, afar, Chris and I were sat talking about this. I can't remember I think we're in Australia at the time, but a remarkable set of cars on all the stands, really. It's just great to be able to walk around a single hall in Paris and see these amazing cars presented so beautifully.
Maybe it's a reflection of the car industry that the world can support ever more classic car shows, but it can't support a new car show. But those Paris halls used to be a Paris motor show that was large. That's gone now. Geneva's gone. And yet more and more people want to go and watch beautiful, to go and see beautiful old cars in the flesh. Not a bad thing. I'm right. Edward, we've been in Australia and New Zealand, myself and Edward, for the last 2 weeks. Edward will cover some of that off in a minute, but I've got a little bit of a story I want to tell you about this M5 Touring I bought. Because it has been a voyage of discovery. Not all of it good, but some of it highly amusing. So I bought the car, having persuaded myself it wasn't a press car and I'd never driven it. Then a man from BMW saw it at the Bicester Scramble, looked at the number plate, went through BMW system, sent me a note saying, it was a press car, you've driven it. Which point I thought, that's not great, because I did used to thrash things. Turns out I drove it to the Nürburgring, or a friend of mine drove it to the Nürburgring to see Nick Heidfeld do a lap of the Nürburgring Nordschleife in 2007, then I drove it back. I have no recollection of this whatsoever. I then took it to Chobham Test Track, where I skidded the shit out of it for an afternoon with someone else. He also said to me, I skidded that car with you. Don't you remember it? I went, no, I don't. This stage, I was thinking, I've got this is a lovely car, but it's got more stories than I thought. Then a friend of mine I used to work with said, actually, after that, it was owned by my friend. And I borrowed it 3 times to go to Europe and thrash the shit out of it with my bikes on the roof of the car. And it averaged 10 mpg. I now felt like the bloke that had been dating the girlfriend who had a more complicated history than I first thought. Anyhow, the car's lovely. And it, while I was away, Dara from Everything M, who's been brilliant, said he would go through it with a fine tooth comb and would sort out the rear suspensions, we've rebuilt all that. But the really good bit is he was going to take it to be remapped because we're going to put a big carbon air box on it. And I'll show you, there'll be a video about this. And to get some more air in, we might get some more air out, make her breathe better. ECU, have a look at it. So he sends me this. Here we go. Turns out the car is already remapped.
Ooh.
It's not how my tuner would say it's a safe tune. Far too much advance on the ignition to a risky level. So it's been backed off a smidgen to stop it running way too lean and detonating. And I was wondering why it's so fast. Anyhow, this leads me to wonder, was this a bent UK press car? Had they been playing with them to make them go? Because this one goes like stink. The two previous people that owned it before me have contacted me to say they didn't play with the ECU. Wow. So something's gone on with it. Anyhow, this is the thing about these old cars. It's costing me a few quid, but I love all the theatre and nonsense.
The stories are...
If I bought an URS6, I wouldn't even open the owner's manual. I'd be driving around it. But then every time I do something, there's another story revealed by this weird old estate car. And I like that. Sorry, carry on.
What power has it got? Did he tell you what it did on the...
We didn't dyno it. It's about 520 horsepower now. It's gone up, and it does go like stink, if I'm honest with you, because even though it was a heavy car then, it's probably 340 kilograms lighter than a modern RS6. So
the airbox is going to give it even more of that BMW M induction.
Oh, I'm not going to go into it too much, but it's full carbon. It sounds sensational now.
Oh, wow.
So it's a special thing. But I just love the fact that every single time I turn a corner, someone else has ragged it. Someone else knows it. Someone else. I mean, it's just the idea that someone went on holiday 3 times in it that I used to work in, and it wasn't even a press car, is absurd. But back to Matt's work. Edward and I have just had our minds blown by New Zealand and Australia. So I wanted to talk about that a bit, please.
Well, I have to talk about that to start with, do I?
Yeah.
So, first of all, we turned up in New Zealand for a team member's wedding, which our minds were blown immediately, not only because the loveliest family I think I've ever met, but we were looked after so exceptionally well, picked up by a collecting cars purchased Defender Heritage Edition, which only happened to come from the family biz back in the day, which was quite fun seeing it on the other side of the world. But we then made it down to Auckland, which in the sunshine is an amazing city.
Beautiful city.
And we had 900 cars turn up to what is the biggest car gathering in Auckland. And the mix of cars down there, Chris, was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was. They had a new four-cylinder C63 AMG saloon there, and there isn't a press car in the UK yet, so I don't. There's something going on there, but a great bunch of people as well. I didn't have any idea there was that level of metal and carbon fibre lurking in Auckland.
And then and everyone seems to listen to the podcast down there, so they were all very upset that you boys weren't down there with us. So next time we'll have to get the Gulf Stream out and get it down there. And then Sydney, we were hoping for about 1,000 cars to turn up, and we had 2,500 cars.
Oh my goodness!
And people waiting for, not saying they were that happy, and I apologise if you had to wait outside, but we had traffic backed up to the highway for about an hour, trying to get them into the Rose Hill Gardens racecourse. But again, amazing weather, such an incredible mix of cars, you know, all of the cars we'd ever want there, and such deep passion for the variety of mix they have down there. Obviously a lot of JDM stuff, but yeah, just brilliant group of people, brilliant cars.
You know when you see something truly eclectic and you think, I want to know how much that person was giggling when they started that this morning to drive here. There was every piece of exotic imaginable, and someone turned up in that weird light green metallic Metro Turbo. Remember that one, the light green?
Yes.
Someone just turned up and just parked it casually next to a load of 911 speedsters and got out and walked away. And I wanted to hug him. And the first car that was allowed into the top deck, where there was a load of people that were waiting in really expensive, again, German and Italian machinery, and this little Peugeot 405 MI16.
That was lovely.
It just snuck in front of all of them, parked up and went, all right, mate, and walked off. It was special. Yeah. And I have to say, on a personal note, 2 days before that, I love Aussie saloon cars. I love Bathurst. And I drove the one, I've waited for ages, an HSV GTSR W1, which is the run-out model, 636 horsepower LS9 in a big Aussie saloon car. It is, I described it as Merv Hughes on four wheels. You know, it's just a snarling bastard of a car. And I'm immensely grateful to drive that. So yeah,
we also fell in love with Sydney, and we're going to need somewhere on the beach down there. Chris is currently trying to get a OnlyFans account to help raise money for it.
But it's $100 million for something on the seaside. That Manish, what have you done this week in cars? Loaded question.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There it is.
Oh.
For those of you, I'm now going to describe this like a radio presenter. Manish is holding a picture of himself leaning or touching against a Ferrari 456. Lead on, Macduff.
Well, Uncle Neil Clifford is very connected, and I'm completely convinced is related to Father Christmas, because I got a text saying that he had a friend called Xavier who has a 456. That he'd bought over from France, was going to keep in London. And he said, Xavier would be delighted to take you for a drive in this, or rather you drive it. And I'd been waiting literally the whole month, kind of counting down the days. And I'd never been to the Duke of London. Have you guys been there?
Merlin and Georgia do a brilliant job down there. It's fantastic.
It's just extraordinary. It was it a pub once, Neil?
Well, it's a whole property development, and actually Merlin and Georgia have had three different locations in Brentford and getting bigger and bigger and developing it each time. But they're Oh, no, it's wonderful. It's like going back to the 60s in terms of entrepreneurship. It's bloody fantastic.
I mean, they are. So I arrived not knowing where I was going. I thought, well, am I meeting them in some kind of pub? But not at all. There's effectively a courtyard that had some of the most beautiful cars I'd ever seen, and some of the most eclectic cars that I'd ever seen. And there she was, Potsy Blue, right in the middle next to a gold Aston Martin DB7. So Xavi had bought both cars, and he is just the most wonderful guy. And he's known Neil, I think, for 25 years. They've known each other through quote unquote luxury retailing. His background's Louis Vuitton, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah. Just the most chic Frenchman. He bought his son and a friend of theirs. They drove the other car. And the mission was meet, have a coffee, me drive the car basically from Brentford to Neil's for coffee and pastries. And it turned out to be an hour and 45 minute drive the way we did it. And I drove this thing on every kind of road. But when I just saw it, honestly, they just kept saying, I don't think we've seen a smile so wide on any. I was like this. I could not stop smiling. The car, I always remember these things as beautiful, but close up, everything about this car is sculptured magnificence. That's the only way. And then I had a little, because I looked inside, it was left-hand drive manual. And the car, mirror to mirror, is about 6 feet 3 inches wide. And I've never driven a left-hand drive car in England before. The last time I changed gear with my right hand was when I was 30, and it was a Formula Ford. And I got a bit nervous. I just sat in the car. And there's to even start it up, he said, look, you put the little peg, there's a little hole, you put it in, put this peg into the hole, the red light suddenly flashes, then you put the key into the starter. You never use the handbrake after you start the car up, and it feels terribly flimsy, so you balance it. I have to say, within 5 minutes, I thought I was at home. I've never had a feeling like that in a car. And there's so much, what did you call it, Chris? You said there's so much glass in those cars. The visibility is just incredible. It's just
understeer, oversteer.
I didn't get to. The thing is, so I pulled out into Brentford traffic, and we found our way eventually onto the M25 and then onto the M40, and then country lanes. And so I got to try this on everything, including pulling up very hard on the, on the left-hand side for the odd tractor. And all I can say is, I think it's 437 horsepower, this car, and it weighs 1.7 tons. So the power to weight ratio on the road is ample. It felt like a go-kart. I could just point it. It's also, it has power steering, which some people may like, may not. He has the old steering wheel, which doesn't have the airbag, and it's beautiful. The size is just absolutely
nice steering wheel.
A good steering wheel.
2 minutes to get comfortable. And the clutch, I was expecting a sort of clutch war, and there wasn't a clutch war. And when I was on the motorway, I just wanted to see what revs each gear would be in at 70 miles an hour. And, we got it up to 6th, and at 70 miles an hour, it was 1,750 revs. But if you just popped it in any gear like that, my only indiscretion, because I was finding on the country roads the hedges very close, because I'm on the left-hand side of the car and the hedges are just to my left. So my road positioning was probably 2 feet too far to the right. And we were going down this twisty bit and I heard it like that. And of course, I touched mirrors with another car. And I was absolutely mortified. So we pulled up and he's so calm. He goes, these things are to drive. What that? And there's me just saying, no, look, please. I'll get it polished now. It's like, we have lunch. And we got to Neil's, and getting to Neil's is like getting to the ultimate privately owned sweet shop. So there was so much more to do. But I have to say, I just pulled up. We had coffee, we had croissants. All I could do is talk about the car. What I asked was for Xavi to drive back. I didn't want to drive it back. I wanted to be in the passenger seat just to appreciate it at a slightly different level, because he really can drive the car. He's had it since 1998.
Yeah, it's owned it a long time.
And the car is a 1994 car. It's absolutely immaculate.
Until now.
So here's a question for you, Manish. You've always had a problem with that rear glass, the shape of it. Have you softened your opinion on that shape?
Pardon?
You know, the rear side glass.
I'm joking. It's so beautiful, that car. You know, just literally. And I think, you know, I'm not tall, but I think if I had to sit in the back for a long journey, I would not have a problem. I think if you're sort of 6 feet, 5 feet, 10, 6 feet, maybe after an hour and a half or so, it would be a little cramped. But, and also the cabin, the only thing, there were just two things that to my eyes dated the car, but it is 30 years old. It's the air conditioning vents. I suppose now we'd have slightly more prissily designed ones because these are really three rectangles.
Out of a fit.
Right in the middle. Yeah. And just the plastic fascia that sits on the console. And by the way, changing gear in that car, I've never changed gear in a Ferrari kind of chrome gate. Clack, 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 clack.
Yeah, it's a great engine, great gearbox, isn't it? It's beautiful.
The nation's waiting, Manish. Are you going to get it?
Well, you know, it's not for sale. I am looking. I re-emailed Mike at Radley. Apparently, there was one at in Paris that went, and I should have got it. But what Xavi did say to me is, what you'd said, Chris, he said, really beware of very low mileage examples. He said, when you buy this car, make sure you take it out, if not every week, definitely every 2 weeks on a good long run. There'll be problems because that's what you're going to get, but you must drive it. Don't leave it in a garage because then you'll get lots of problems. And he did point out every year he has to get the electric windows adjusted.
Yeah.
They do slip still.
They drop.
You know, just things like that. But I mean, you know.
Been pro the M. I've always wanted an M. But then when you drive a non-M, you do think, am I being fussy here? Because this is still a control.
Yeah. Well, Xavier was very happy to provide the service, Manish.
I love him. I love it. What a wonderful son. What a wonderful... I literally couldn't stop smiling that day, just like this. And I'd sit down and go, I did that. It was just...
That's what cars are for, aren't they? Ultimately, yeah. my other half was having a ropey morning yesterday. And she had to go and get the banana out of the garage. And I phoned her and she's in a very different mood afterwards. I said, what's the difference? She went, just drove the yellow car really slowly around somewhere and I feel better now. I said, that's what they're for. They're like dogs. Chris Cooper, what have you done this week?
So that weekend that you were sampling 456, Motorsport UK had its annual Night of Champions, where we recognised and awarded prizes to British Touring Car Champion, British GTs, Hill Climb. There's a guy, Wallace Menge, who is a Scottish gentleman, who's won it for the last 4 years in a row, who is the most entertaining company. So well done to you for winning again. Ross Brawn, we awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award to. And Nigel Mansell, also, we decided should get a night. But in true Nigel style, there was a drama.
Was there?
It was a drama. He's not been very well. He had, I think, gallstone or gallbladder emergency. So he sent Steve Ryder, most everyone will know who Steve Ryder is. So Steve Ryder compares the evening for us. And he said, Nigel sent a little video. And just the subtle way that Steve said that said, this might be a long video with a lot of explanation of his trauma and difficulty. And it had been really cleverly edited to show that this probably went on for about 6 hours, the original recording. and so he couldn't make it. But Stefano was there to help present Ross with his award, which was great. So, and Stefano looked very, very happy. And I suspect now part of that was because he knew what we all now know, which is Lewis is going to Ferrari. So we'll come on to that later. But that, what I want to talk about was that day we had our first board meeting of the year. And our chair, David Richards, was unable to make it. So he said to me, would you mind chairing the board today? So for a day, I was in charge of everything. So I made a few changes. I've got a few of them listed here. So for this year, all national championships must have a naturally aspirated V8 engine. I mean, They just got it, haven't they, really?
Yes.
Club championships, where they run a four-cylinder engine, must have a BDA, maybe a BDG. And track limits. Track limits has been a real debate in the sport everywhere the last few years. So I decided that this year it will be legal to fit on the front of your car a spaced ray gun blaster thing.
Yeah.
And if you see somebody in front of you breaching your track limits, you can blast them. You can have three blasts per race. That's
Neil's got one of those on the front of his car for the motorway.
That last one of those is interesting. It's a great idea, Mr. C, but it does pose the slightly awkward situation that when you were racing, if someone had been following you, they could have zapped you on every corner of the racetrack.
They would have to catch me first.
The track limits for you were the walls of the circuit.
Yeah, that was, they were, the nice ladies and gentlemen listening might not know that my nickname was Curbs. There's a slightly less admirable interpretation of that, but be assured it was because I viewed the curb stones on the circuits as generally merely optional.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, well, I love the idea of being in charge. I do love it. So, I've never been in charge of anything.
I'm kidding, David. I didn't do all those things, but God, I was tempted. So I had a lovely week in cars.
Excellent. Now, we move on to the thorny issue of Formula One. Of all weeks to pre-record a podcast, we pre-recorded one with the biggest piece of news this podcast would have had to ruminate over in its 51-week existence. Only we could do that. So as the pre-recorded one went out, I thought, oh my God, we've balls this up. But we're here now, and we will discuss the fact that Lewis Hamilton is on his way to Ferrari in 2025, or maybe sooner. Who can tell? Because looks like this year could get even bumpier once we have the outcome of a Red Bull tribunal on Friday for Christian Horner. Because that, it sounds like, might have ramifications for a Mr. Adrian Newey and where he carries on working. So there's all sorts to consider here. Let's start off with the man who always gives us those mots justes, Neil Clifford, with swearing, please.
I do recall predicting this.
You did. You did.
it's obviously really great to really not know what you're talking about, because like a broken clock, you are right. Once a day.
Eventually, yeah.
twice a day.
Or twice a day, of course, unless it's 24 o'clock. If it's a digital watch. I think it's brilliant, isn't it? I mean, I think it's brilliant for Lewis just because everyone wants to drive for Ferrari. It's brilliant for the sport just because it actually makes something interesting that we're all going to be interested in, not only in 24, but also obviously looking forward to 25. I think... is he going to get the eighth? I mean, we all want it. Getting it in a Ferrari would just be magic, wouldn't it? But I mean, I think that's probably like a 20% chance. When do the rules change? 26, not 25. So maybe it's more likely 26, and then he's going to be like 56 years old or something, isn't he? So hopefully he's still fit by that point. Bless him. So I think it's all, I mean, Liberty must be over the moon because people are talking about Formula One again because we all got a bit bored with it, didn't we, with the Max thing. And I didn't even think about that, Chris. But if Adrian goes somewhere else, that would even be even more bloody exciting, wouldn't it? But I'm sure that's relatively... He's probably on £1 billion a year at Red Bull. So he's going to stay there, I'd imagine.
Well, if we consider the fact that after Lewis's announcement, the market cap of Ferrari went up 6%. That day, they've probably got the budget to hire anyone they wanted to hire.
Yeah.
Chris, they had also announced their results that day. That's the only thing I would say. And they were great results.
Yeah.
So they timed that rather beautifully. They announced their great results and Lewis.
Yeah. It's what, I mean, one of the best run companies in the world. You know,
they, John Elkann, he's amazing.
They don't put a foot wrong, though, do they? It's amazing.
Yeah.
They have found a way of keeping people spending money in ways that that we can't even imagine. So, Manish, what's your take on this then? By the way, the facts of the situation are that Lewis is going to Ferrari in 25. Everything else I said there is pure naughty conjecture, all right? So I will say allegedly before and after it. But I do believe this is going to precipitate some other changes. I really do. Manish, what do you think?
You know, I think you're right. It's funny. I think this is, it seems so obvious. And weirdly, back in 2014, I was talking to a promoter friend, and they were pretty gloomy about Formula One at that time. Sorry, 2018. It was post-Bernie, and they were pretty gloomy. It was pre-COVID. They felt it was all a bit stuck. And they said, you know, what do you think? If you had a magic wand and you could do anything in Formula One, what would you do? And I said, I'd put Lewis in a Ferrari. I mean, that was obviously back 6 years ago when he was sort of closer to his peak. And it depends on what you read. You know, there are some stories out there saying that he was denied a Mercedes ambassador job. He wanted a 10-year job as a Mercedes ambassador. For his post Formula One career, kind of a la Michael. And if that's the case, do you remember when Michael just reappeared in the silver? It was as if Ferrari never happened. And in those 3 years, it was just Michael Mercedes. And, you know, it really undid his decade at Ferrari. And you just wonder whether Mercedes would have known, if this story is true, in a way, what a dumb thing they had done. And my other point is the contractual point. There was a lot of sort of gloating about, oh, yeah, we've done a 2-year deal. It's a 1+1, giving everyone flexibility. I think a really good manager gives himself flexibility, maybe not his driver. So it would have been a 2-year deal as far as Lewis was concerned, and a 1+1 as far as Mercedes were concerned. Because I think to let him go, they've let him go on the back of losing for 2 years in a row. They're going to have to design a car pretty much from scratch, you know, their new concept car this year, knowing he's leaving. And I think Neil's right. He'll go to Ferrari as a 7-times champion. He's unlikely to go as an 8-times champion. And you then wonder what Lewis's Mercedes legacy was. And that, you know, people will say, well, what's the memory that you most have of Lewis Hamilton? And I go, oh, of him not winning the championship in 2021. You know, that's the moment that we will all remember, I think, in 10 years' time. And then the final thing I would say is it looks like there's an engineering exodus to Ferrari.
Yes, there's a lot of people gone.
Yeah, and I think I can see that becoming, you know, a little bit like the Benetton migration to Ferrari in Michael's time. I can see a few Mercedes engineers or up Red Bull engineers, as you've pointed out, making the leap to Maranello, and, you know, and why not? And fantastic for Liberty as well. I mean, if Ferrari start winning championships with a guy like Lewis, age 41, but 40, sorry, behind the steering wheel, 41, with somebody like a new designing it, and we have this sort of 5-year period where the red car's untouchable, that's just, it's going to be good for everyone.
Box office. Edward Lovett, what are your thoughts?
Well, I heard he couldn't get a Pura Sangue allocation, so that's the only reason he's going.
Very good. Very good.
My only comment really is that it just shows you how in tune these Formula One teams are, and probably the management, because going into 2024 season, it didn't feel like an overly appealing way to spend my weekends watching the same races that we watched last year with the same teams and the same performance. And this will draw me back to the television for the first race.
Yes.
Even though Hamilton might not be in a Ferrari this year, but I think it just there's excitement around the sport.
Yeah, I totally agree. The Formula One has this uncanny ability to reinvent itself just when you think it's dying. Hmm. And I love that. All great entities manage to do that.
You said Ferrari went up 6%. I think the cash value of that's like $7 billion. Yes. You know, that's a remarkable commercial decision. You know, we hear about these huge salaries and deals going on. No one's worth that. No one's worth that. Well, I'm sorry, in big corporate world, that's why these deals happen. You know, that's a modest salary payment for a $9 billion market cap increase. It's a remarkable business decision.
Chris Cooper, will he use the curbs or not?
Oh, I hope so. If he needs any help, he knows, you know, he knows where we are. I think it's great. I think it's brilliant. It just injected excitement. That day when the story was unfolding, last Wednesday, Thursday, whenever it was, we all saw it in the morning. We thought, really? Mm. And then it was clear it was going to happen. And there was the staff meeting at Brackley, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and people coming out saying, yeah, we've just been told he's leaving. It happened really quickly. So talking to people in the know, probably wouldn't wish me to say who they are. You guys probably know who I'm talking about. It does look like it happened quite quickly. Clearly, Toto only really knew the Wednesday morning when he had a scheduled breakfast.
Day before, yeah.
And the question, the first question I would wanted to ask, and I've kind of since got a bit of an answer to this, was, so last week, Ferrari, when you were saying to Charles, you're our guy, we're going to extend your already big contract for another 3 years because you're our guy. Did you tell him about Lewis? Did you even know about Lewis? Because Charles is clearly still staying. So either he did know and he wasn't that fussed about it, which sounds extraordinary, because it must change everything. It must change everything if you show. Clearly, Carlos has changed even more. He's out of a job. Maybe the reverse to Mercedes wasn't available, wasn't interesting. Toto didn't want it. Who knows? So I think it's mega. It completely dwarfed the news from the previous day or whatever it was that Andretti have been rather smartly turfed out of the door by FOM, by Liberty Media, with a very long and actually quite blunt message about, we don't think you understand the enormity of the challenge you're taking on. And it's a big challenge. Design a completely new car from scratch for an organization that's never designed and built a car before. And then after a year, design another new car completely from scratch because the rules change. So it's a hard one. So I think for the F1 this year, it's amazing.
Mm.
Who's going to go to the Mercedes second seat? They've got this guy, Andrea Kimi Antonelli, 17 years old. He's in the same team as Oli Bierman this year, Prema, in F2. He's probably too young. Oli Bierman, could Mercedes nick him if they wanted him?
I think they should put Albon in that car before
Carlos is an answer. Snag him. Who knows? So it's going to be great, because how's Carlos going to react? How is Charles going to panic if he's got a car that's kind of half decent? Will he desperate to get a championship this year because he thinks next year I've got the best racer in the world ever in the LC? So yeah, it just changes this year. It's great. Thank you, Lewis.
If you're Charles, you're just mightily pissed.
You must be.
Are you? Because I think.
Yes,
Charles is living a pretty charmed life at the moment. He hasn't achieved necessarily what he should have achieved. He's got a contract that's suspiciously long. And he seems to quite like the social media. So I think he's done all right. And actually, you could argue that maybe Carlos deserved to be there more over the next couple of years. I think science has had a really rough ride.
Yeah.
So let's pose some interesting ones from this. Outcomes I'd love to see. Just imagine if on episode 78 of the Collecting Addicts podcast, on 88, we are discussing the fact that Lewis Hamilton has just won the world championship in a Mercedes and then has to fucking leave and go to Ferrari. That Carlos Sainz has comprehensively outpointed Charles Leclerc, who's gone in some sort of meltdown and now isn't worth the paper he's written on. What I love about this is it's like the furrow into compacted turf, isn't it? Everything's been turned upside down.
Yeah.
And now we can start to imagine new narratives. And that's before we discuss this Christian Horner thing, which I'm there's no way we're going to try and speculate what's gone on there. But the fact is, they're having to react to a situation through their correct professional HR channels, and the outcome of that could be that he's no longer team principal of Red Bull. I'm probably not his number one fan in terms of the way he does things, but actually, he's been phenomenally successful, and it's inconceivable that anyone could step in and do his job now at that notice. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
so this is
his 20th season, took over in 2005, age 30, 31.
He's a ferocious competitor.
Yeah,
and you know, are we seeing an empire dismantled at short notice. Are we seeing something happening here that we hadn't expected?
Could be. I mean, everyone talks about, well, we, you know, we're not necessarily in the know, but one's aware of suggestions that there's a, if Christian were to go, then Adrian is allowed to release himself from his contract or vice versa. Whether that would still apply in force majeure where Christian has been removed and, hang on, no, we didn't want you to go just because we had to deal with a particular situation there. Who knows? So, but it's just wonderful. It's just, it just creates so much uncertainty and how people are going to behave. And, you know, if Christian is still CEO next week, then it'll be, you know, difficult for him naturally and any person in that position. So yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think Lewis going to Ferrari is brilliant. The uncertainty of the two Ferrari drivers this year, a winner might be the winner. Looks like George, suddenly, he must have gone there thinking, I might have 1 or 2 years of Lewis, and then it'll be gone. And suddenly it looks like, well, I've got 4 years, maybe even more of Lewis. Hang on, that's not what I thought was going to happen. And the car shit as well.
Yeah, what, but what of the car shit this year? You know, there's what I love about this, there's so little information, it's all, we can just speculate as much as we want. I mean, Lewis surely has part of his decision is predicated on the fact that he's seen something about the car that he doesn't think is great. He's lost confidence in their ability to give him the machinery over the next 2 or 3 years. There must have been a money motivation as well, or maybe just the wanting to stir things up, but also maybe wanted to be box office again, because the news has been quite very much Verstappen over the last year. And I suspect Lewis is going to earn more money than him going forwards, which is a nice one of those sort of just polish the apple collar, isn't it? Yeah.
Didn't Toto sign a new contract about a week or two before?
Yeah.
Did he?
He did.
He's locked in for 5 years now.
Yes.
Well,
some of the social posts going on within 24, 48 hours after it were just brilliant.
Go on.
No, well, I think we've shared some of them. I just love some of the memes. Another aspect of it,
I love that it's a bit like those episodes of The Simpsons when they predicted Donald Trump becoming the president. You know, we watched that episode. It was pure irony and satire. This time last year, there were memes on Instagram of Lewis wearing a Ferrari overalls, like it was a joke that would never happen.
Yeah,
and I chapeau to the sport for giving us this stuff to chat about, because it's
Neil knew though. Neil knew,
but yeah. Neil Clifford knew, because he's got Potsy with a
he's got a red
leather lined boot on his Potsy car.
He's Lapo Elkin with a suit on.
I love Lapo. I think Lewis looks the smartest out of everyone. He's very shrewd and very clever dude, I think.
Yeah,
he's still off a piece of mods on Lewis leaving before the season's over, and I might take them. Because this is my last question to you all, my knowledgeable friends. Why announce it so early? Why announce it now? It's an odd thing to do, to give a whole year for the biggest announcement we've had in probably 5 years in the sport.
I think this would literally, I think it's got two reasons. I think it is a 1+1 deal. And I think that the second part of it, there may have been a time sensitive element. And I think the other bit of this is, I think there was a kind of bigger picture in the background, which is Liberty, Ferrari, the day their shares come out. I mean, somebody has thought this through and gone, you know, maximum impact. And the other thing is, it just makes Lewis news for a year.
Yeah.
You know, and the final thing, of course, it's Formula One, right? If they didn't announce it, we would all have heard about it in about 2 weeks' time or 10 days' time, because you can't keep a secret in that sport. It just doesn't happen.
It's true.
Nothing like this.
It was the 31st of January. That date would have been written in the contract.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there was a trigger date. He pressed the button.
I tested that one. The biggest motivation for announcing it now is it saves Fred's neck. If they'd had a mediocre year this year with nothing to look forward to, given that this is, well, now if they don't win this year anything, it'll be the longest period they haven't won anything. Fred would have been in the crosshairs. Now he's inoculated himself, because people almost worry about this year. Say, stuff this year, I'm waiting for next year. Lewis is going to be in our car. It's going to be, so Fred would have been.
And how is this? How do you think his friendship, especially if a lot of Mercedes engineers go to Ferrari, how do you think his friendship with Toto is going to go? Do you think they'll still have each other's house keys?
Fred and Toto.
Mm.
I think they just look longer than that. I think I suspect Toto will grudgingly say tip of the hat.
Given the numbers are so big, what would the odds be on Lewis being in a Ferrari for the first race of this season?
This season? Squillions to one.
Yes, I think they probably are. Although, let's have a look at the testing times. Are they testing in Barcelona as usual? Where are they?
Bahrain.
Bahrain.
Week after next.
I'm the bit that I'm really fascinated about is if a bit of turmoil happens at Red Bull, will we see how carefully managed Max is in that team? You know, if there's a bit of instability there, will we suddenly see the old Max? You know, that some of the temperamental stuff that harms his performances, because that's the only chink for me that for all his competitors, he was relentless last year. Yeah. So they must be sitting there thinking, hopefully it gets a bit testy and there's a, you know, Helmut and Christian have a fight outside the pits and someone pisses in his seat and they have a right old ding-dong and then he's slow in FP1 because otherwise it does look like Max is going to run away with it again, doesn't it, sadly?
Yeah.
Max to Mercedes in 2025.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Wasn't
there that lovely story about him and his family going to rent Portimao Circuit? And he got to the airport to get in his rental car, which happened to be a new Mercedes sports car. And they wouldn't give it to him because he was too young for the insurance.
Oh, yes.
I have a problem sometimes.
That's because you look so youthful. Right, we're moving on to our two-car garage, which today is posed by Greg Dickens. And my eyesight is deteriorating at a speed. Wait there. Let me get some glasses. Here we go. These tortoiseshell numbers are not mine. Here we go. You're a successful northern business owner with significant disposable income and an irrational dislike of Porsche. Deary me, Greg, come on. You're looking for two nearly new cars. So you're acutely aware of how hard money is to earn. You won't needlessly overpay for a car that is superior to the alternative, but not by such a margin that it's worth the price premium. Case in point, a Singer DLS is a better car than a normal Singer, but not four times better. Neil Clifford. Budget is irrelevant, but relative value is. If it's expensive, it must represent something tangibly superior to cheaper alternatives. Car one has to be a fast convertible road car that you can enjoy a Sunday blast in while still looking good, pulling up outside a fancy restaurant. It must be comfortable for the wife or the husband. Car two, a track-focused supercar to show all those damned GT3s up on track. I fear Greg wasn't given his allocation for a 992 ST. Now,
no one was.
Let's move on. We better get through these fairly quickly. I'm going to go with Edward Lovett first.
Well, for my convertible, I think I'm going to go for an Aston Martin DBS 770, one of these last run-out versions. And I'm sure as a nearly new one of those, you'll get some discount off list. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's a handsome-looking car, that is.
Yeah.
Handsome-looking car.
I'm having to choose a different car, you utter bastard. Love it. Right, carry on.
Say that again?
I'm having to choose a different convertible now.
Okay. I did quite well there, did I?
You did.
And then I think for the track-focused car to beat the GT3s, I'm guessing he's talking about a Porsche GT3 that he drove there. I think I'm going to have to go for a Mercedes AMG GT GT3. I'm not going to have a road car. I'm going to have a proper GT3 race car because... Oh. Really, the best way to destroy the competitors on a track day is turn up in a proper GT3 car.
Yeah.
Tell you what, that's faultless. That's the best two cars you've chosen in a long, long time. I've nothing.
Well, thank you very much. I've obviously been with you for a week and a half, so I've taken all your greatness.
there you go, Edward. Manish.
I looked at this as one of the most contradictory two-car garages I've ever read. Parsimonious northern businessman doesn't want to spend money, doesn't like Porsches, but likes racing on a track day and has wife. So this is clearly a bloke from Pudsey who's the sole sari importer from Pakistan, isn't that? That's who this is, right? That's what he's, and he's got his money. So I think he doesn't spend it. And the one thing we know about all South Asians like me is we love our Mercedes. We love our Mercedes. And I think he's not going to buy a new one. I think he's going to buy an R107 300 SL or a 350 SL.
Yeah.
He'll get a low mileage one. It will look great. He can pull up to the Balti house with his wife and it will all just be absolutely perfect. Road car, he's not going to, I mean, his track car, he's not going to be able to handle a vicious beast like a Mercedes track car, a GT. These are dreams, okay? What he's going to do is he's going to find a heavily discounted Exige, the six-cylinder, 350 horsepower baby. It's nice and light. As Chris Cooper pointed out to me, almost impossible to skid that car. Would not pick that car, just nicely balanced, probably 50,000 pounds. He'll get it down to 45, and that will be his car. And if he can get it in fluorescent pink, that would be absolutely ideal. We'll go with the sari shop. So that's what the man's going to do.
I like it. I have to take issue with the choice of the SL because I think it's a beautiful car. But the first word of that description was fast. And having driven a 300 SL 109, they're not, sorry, 107, they're not fast. But we'll let you have it because they're beautiful cars. Neil Clifford, where are you going?
Right, I'm going, I think probably the coolest, best to drive, nearly new convertible. If you've got limitless money and you don't want to lose money because they will go up in value, continue to go up in value, is a 458 Speciale Aperta. Because I just think it does everything. It's a Swiss Army knife. You've got those bumpy road button for the wife. It's a hard top, so it's not... it's lovely and warm when it's raining and it's cold, but you can take the roof off. It sounds magnificent. You're probably going to make money. You're a Yorkshireman. You don't want to lose a pound. So I think 458 Speciale Aperta. And you know what? He's so smart and he's thought this through. He doesn't need another car for the track. So he's actually just going to have one car and save himself another 250 grand. So he's just going to have a 458 Speciale Aperta, the same one for the track, and he will look super smart and super cool.
Neil Clifford, do you know anyone that has such a car?
I do, and he has a lot of silly hats.
Chris Cooper.
So I think the important bit here was his irrational dislike of Porsche. So the Track Focus supercar, he wants something that's a good value, must represent something tangibly superior. I think he'd go for 720S McLaren.
Yeah.
120, 130 grand right now. There's one that Cameron found, 7 years old, 7,000 miles, performance version.
They are rockets on a circuit.
That would just, yeah. They'd all the GT3s would just go wibble.
Yeah.
Fast convertible road car, that's a really interesting one. So Cameron and Finn found for me, I don't know how they found this, I think that maybe they thought I'd be interested. They found an Aventador 700 Roadster, 2015, 30,000 miles, 168 grand. I thought that was a lot of car for the money.
Yeah.
But actually the one we went for was another one they found. And I've sort of looked at this already myself. At the SL shop, there is an SL60 for sale.
Ah.
Not silver with blue, is it?
No, it's blue with beige. And I think that...
Still not 40 grand, that car, Neil.
It's a 129, 53,000 at the moment. 45 to the right buyer, I reckon. So I think that would be excellent value. It would satisfy his Porsche frustration, and the SL60 would be comfortable for his wife.
Yeah.
Or his partner.
Yeah.
I've had to readjust about seven times here on the hoof because you've all chosen most of the cars that I wanted to choose. The irrational hatred of Porsche is interesting because if you're so close to the Porsche, I do think to myself, what's going to make you happy? But what are you? Does it mean you're anti-German?
We've just made him happy.
The fast road convertible, for me, every time I look at the big Bentleys and the Ferraris and all the other stuff, I always think back to the car that I enjoyed most convertible motoring in. It's those bloody SL63s from 2009 that I've chosen about six times.
I had that on my list as well.
Having another one, because it's the best convertible I've ever used. It's just a fantastic car. The only thing that I might add is I'm a total sucker for these Targa 911s. I just think they look magnificent. So maybe a Targa, but yeah, it's that SL. $30,000. I mean, I'm not wasting. I'm a northerner here. I'm being parsimonious. I imagine I'm the boat that founded Morrison's by the description. He was worth about 700 million and still used to eat a plank of wood every night, didn't he? Occasionally treats himself to a glass of water. The track car is interesting because you think you're going to turn up and beat the Porsche. You might do for a lap, but the bloke in the Porsche is going to drive it home. You're going home on a low loader, probably. So you either got to go really, really fast and impress everyone before you go on the low loader, or you need something similarly reliable. And the only car I know that really takes the punishment that well and goes that fast is the AMG GTR, the one with the big wing, not the Black Series, which is silly.
Yeah.
The one that was launched in that sort of metallic green colour and has
a great
value car. And if you drive them well, they're as fast as a GT3. Mm. So that's my choice. Mine were weaker than yours, all of you. Anyone like to offer some music before we say goodbye to our troops?
I would, yeah.
Okay, Edward, you're rarely so keen, so let's go with you.
I'm rarely so keen, but there's a song that's going wild on social media at the moment, and it's called Dance You Out of My Head by a woman called Kat Janice, who very unfortunately has been diagnosed with cancer.
Oh dear.
And it's terminal. And this is the only song I think she's released. And wow. All the proceeds will be going to her 7-year-old son.
Wow.
So
okay.
Go listen to it because it's an incredible song anyway. But all of you are listening, go download it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a solid endorsement. Neil Clifford.
I don't like Mondays, the Boomtown Rats. If you work in retail, it sort of resonates.
Lucky it's Tuesday.
It's a great track.
Or Wednesday, whatever day.
Yeah.
Manish, what are we going to go for?
I don't know if you guys saw the Grammys, but Tracy Chapman appeared for the first time, and she sang with Luke Combs, so Fast Car. But the version on the Grammys, it is unbelievable.
I need to watch
Find
that.
It on YouTube.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Chris Cooper.
Celine Dion was there as well, wasn't she? She presented the award to Taylor Swift. Taylor. Just done. Yeah. It was the Grammys of female singers. It was amazing. It's hard. None of us can beat what Edward said. We must. It's a really, really important thing you've shared, Edward. What I did have in my mind, about 20 years ago, there was a song by DB Boulevard called Another Point of View. It's just the nicest song to listen as you're just driving along the road, whether in your new Alpine A110, Neil, or Manish. Could be an Alpine A110 for you as well, if not a 456. So DB Boulevard, Another Point of View, lovely song to drive to.
I got in a car yesterday and was playing with the hi-fi, and I got the settings going quite well. My son has just passed his driving test.
Oh, congrats.
And it's this car's got some subwoofers in it, because why wouldn't you have a subwoofers in your car as a young kid? And a pop song, a popular music song came on that I think is just the best. I think pop songs are so clever. And this is, and I defy anyone to put this one in a car and not just have their day brightened. It's Holiday by Madonna. It's an absolutely fantastic tune.
Yeah, love that.
Just mega. Beautifully produced. It's happy. And I was tapping the steering wheel within a couple of minutes. And that's what I seek music to make me tap the steering wheel. I like that. Thank you for joining us. We will never, ever attempt to pre-record a podcast if Lewis is about to make the most seismic move in F1 history. We apologise for that. But thank you for joining us for episode 51. We look forward to having you for episode 52 next week. Thank you to my fellow co-hosts, Manish Pandey, Neil Clifford, Chris Cooper, Edward Lovett, and Johnny, who was in his pants.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.